kindness is not a band-aid. You know, it's not about like, oh, let's all get along. Kindness looks different for everybody. It looks different for every company culture. It looks different for every situation. And it's effective in that way that it can morph and evolve for everybody's situation.
Welcome to the Mindful Communication Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Miller. And on today's episode, I sit down with Adrian Bankert. Adrian is an Emmy and Edward R. Murrow award-winning correspondent for ABC News, Good Morning America, World News Tonight, and Nightline. She is the author of the book, Your Hidden Superpower, The Kindness That Makes You Unbeatable at Work and Connects You with Anyone. Adrian has taken a lot of time out of her life to think about this concept of kindness and the role that it plays in her life and the lives of others. And she's come to a point where she's really redefined kindness as this incredible leadership and personal quality that one can inhabit in their daily life. In fact, my biggest takeaway from this conversation that we had is this idea that kindness is really us living into our highest self, into our most authentic self. When we are really being ourselves, our truest version of ourselves, we are generally being kind. And that was a huge insight for me. And kindness is not necessarily what we learned in school as being kind. It's not necessarily being nice to people, which we distinguish in this episode. It's about really standing up for what you believe in and bringing a genuine compassion, generosity, and gratitude into your life. In the first half of this interview, we talk about what kindness is and really start to distinguish it clearly so that we get a better understanding of how it shows up in our life. Adrian, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Jonathan. I'm so glad to be with you.
Yeah, likewise. And I'm really happy to have you talking about a subject that's close to my heart, and it's really around kindness. You wrote a book about it. We're going to talk all about the book. And I want to, I start off by giving our listeners and myself even an idea about what exactly do you mean by kindness?
So for me, kindness is a few things. It's identity. It's more who you are than what you're doing, because your behavior will follow your heart. It's also the intuitive discernment that you need to identify opportunities, to know the right direction in life, to be sensitive to other people and more situationally aware. And it's 100% authenticity. And so for a lot of people, they want to be authentic or tap into that. But I think it's become so much of a slogan or a colloquial word that people don't realize that there is a way to trigger 100% authenticity. That part of you, that genuineness that can never be duplicated. That is what kindness is.
So you're saying kind of like kindness is related to this authenticity, but the authenticity, we've kind of lost this meaning almost. And when we really look at the essence of what it is this element of kindness that we bring. And you mentioned as like in a beingness, which we'll talk all about. It's that kindness that we bring into our life that is actually really the authentic who we are.
Yeah, because if you think about it, your kind self is your highest self. It's your best self. You know, I remember when the hashtag live your best life or I'm living my best life or my best self came about, but I don't really think a lot of people knew how to tap into what that was. It's like, just be real. Well, what does that mean? Just be yourself. What in the world does that mean? But what I saw when I recognized kindness and how it was the most elevated version of us, you know, it was us, not just on our best behavior, but really conscious of other people, really conscious of how much weight our words carried, what our actions meant, not just in a moment, but the domino effect. That to me was like an aha moment. Wow, that is our best self. So yes, that authenticity comes when we are being kind. A sense of identity comes, a sense of wholeness comes when we are exhibiting our kindest acts. And everybody has a thumbprint that's unique to them. I believe that we've been taught mostly because we think it's elementary, I think as a culture and as generations, that it's so simple, like, oh, it's buying the coffee for the person in line behind you. That is a kindness. But if you delve deeper into kindness, you actually can revolutionize what kindness means for you and have your unique imprint on other people. Your kindness could be a totally out of the box, version that I would never imagine because you are you and I am me.
And I guess that kind of ties back to the beingness. It's not so much kindness as like specific actions, which like you gave the example of buying coffee as, yeah, super ubiquitous. But when we talk about it as a way of being, there's that unique fingerprint, which I absolutely love. So when it comes to myself and our listeners tapping into that kindness as a way of being, you know, how do I know what's kind and what's not kind?
So I always use kindness as a fitness model, right? So you or me or somebody listening might decide, I want to stay a certain size. I want to have a certain body weight, certain waist circumference. I'm going to do things. I'm going to schedule things in my day. I'm going to get on my Peloton. I'm going to go for a jog. I'm going to walk the dog. I'm going to do sit-ups and push-ups every morning. I'm going to schedule it. And that becomes a regimen of fitness. Well, eventually, if you're consistent with that, it becomes a lifestyle. And then over time, it becomes who you are. You become immediately associated with health and wellness and fitness by your friends and by those who know you at work, because it's like, oh, there he goes again, getting on his bike. There she goes again. She's going for a morning jog. We just know she's going to do a marathon this year. The kindness is the same way. What I believe has happened is random acts of kindness became very popularized because it was something we could all kind of think about as spontaneous and fun and exciting. But when we schedule kindness, it actually creates a muscle memory for following warm impulses. And one definition of kindness is using your conscience for other people's benefit. So if I am getting a muscle memory for following warm impulses and I schedule kindness every day, I say, I'm going to do a kind act at 11 a.m. I'm going to make some just because calls to colleagues or friends or family. Every week, I'm going to have another goal. And every year or every quarter, I'm going to have this giving goal surrounding kindness and kindness to people who my heart breaks for. You are going to start to become more kindly fit. And it's going to develop a lifestyle in you that will eventually become knee-jerk responses of compassion, even in times of great pressure.
And so, I mean, what I'm hearing in that also is that there's some, and I guess it's what you get really from reading the book, is there's some intentional thought behind what does kindness look like for me? And then one thing you touched on, and we're going to get into some practices around that, but it is that practice element. Like you schedule, you said you schedule just because calls and you have a giving goals. Like this is part of, like you literally open your schedule and you'll see a block of time set aside from that. And so it seems like naturally as you repeat that, just like any, I guess, like fitness habit you have, it just becomes kind of like something that you just do because that's who you are.
Yes. And you know, we talk about coaching and mentoring. I have a number of different calls that are mentor and coached based. Those calls are so consistent. It keeps me anchored in this kind identity that I am endeavoring to maintain. And so it's like you're constantly returning to kindness. You can have a selfish thought or you can have a moment of frustration, but then you have to snap out of it because you realize that people are relying on you every Monday at a certain time, every Wednesday at a certain time, right? And all these different things that you're doing that you've committed to by creating the schedule of kindness, giving. I have these charitable goals. I have a particular charitable goal to an organization that I've been working with for years. And it's, you know, a number in the tens of thousands of dollars. And so for me, I have to consciously think, okay, am I going to break that down into bits or am I going to wait till the end of the year and just dump it on it? But if I give it regularly, it's something that I'm constantly thinking of. It's keeping me focused on charity. It's keeping me focused on philanthropy. Those practical things actually end up anchoring you at times when the world feels crazy or life feels intense.
One thing that comes up for me, because for me, it's really clear. And this is, I think, a trap that I fall into. And I think a lot of our listeners will, you know, they'll agree with this, is this idea that we're really focused on that kind of doing aspect. And really right now, what you're talking about in the book is the being, because it really, I think you even have a quote here. It's from a later part in your book, but it's what I do is not who I am. It's who I am influences and infuses everything that I do. And I really loved that quote because it shows that through those initially scheduled actions that you have, what eventually becomes of it is that it goes beyond just those actions, and like literally it permeates your life. And it like you said, infuses everything that you do. And so then there's that kindness all over your life.
Yeah. And even in the moments where you lose your cool, even in the moments where you could have been more kind, the fact that you care more that you were unkind or notice that you were unkind is growth in your kind identity. I think a lot of times people are like, well, you know, I sometimes come off too pushy or too bossy, or sometimes, you know, because I'm a boss or because I'm an entrepreneur and I have things to do and I have, you know, such a tight schedule. And I say, well, don't be hard on yourself. Just because you had a moment doesn't mean you're not kind. It means you had a moment. And so returning to that kind identity is the number one, the fact that you cared is proof that you're kind. And number two, the fact that you can always return to kindness. Sometimes it's not necessary to go and apologize to everybody, because I think sometimes people do that with the motivation of assuaging their own grief. You know, it's like, I feel bad, let me apologize. Sometimes the kindest thing to do is sit back, reflect on how you handled a moment, think about how you could have done better, and then make every intention to practice that without explaining yourself to people. We worry too much, I think, especially those who endeavor to be kind and endeavor to be good human beings, about like the publicity of it all. You know, the people pleasing comes into play, right? Where they're going to think that I'm a jerk, or they're going to think that I'm full of whatever because I'm the one who talks about, I wrote a book on kindness. Now what, you know? And I had this aha moment in the course of writing this book where anytime I thought I'm not kind enough, that was me saying, I am not enough. Mm-hmm. Kind had to become my identity so that it wasn't about performance-based identity. So I wake up as a woman, I accept that. Like, I don't think about it. I'm not even conscious of it. I just know I'm a woman. The same way I see kindness is that I wake up kind. If I have a moment, you know, I mean, I know it sounds weird because I'm using gender, but it's like, the fact is nothing can take me away from my identity as a woman. Nobody can argue with me that I'm not one. The same thing happens with kindness. When I decide, I claim that, I command that, nobody can tell me I'm unkind. I did have a moment. I'm not perfect in that day, but I will return to my kind identity without having to prove to you who I am. I just am.
I was just having a conversation kind of like this, and maybe this is related, maybe it's not, but I think it is pretty spot on, is this idea, the distinction between being a master and mastery. And, you know, when we think about athletes, when we think about people who are working on being the best of a certain thing, and in this case, you know, the author of this book about kindness, working on being as kind as she can be, it's about that mastery. It's that understanding that, of course, you're going to fall off. And as soon as you kind of label yourself a master, you've now stopped learning. Like, you've hit a roof. That's actually the time to run away, because there's some end there. But it's that continual mastery of, this is who I am. I'm going to fall off. And when I do fall off, I'm going to see, okay, well, what went wrong? How do I get back on? And how do I continue to infuse more and more and more of that as like kind of endless pursuit?
Yeah, because if you look at an athlete who is among the best in the football world or the basketball world or track, they are not going to go to their fans and say, I am so sorry that I blew that play. I am so sorry that I messed up. They are going to take the L and they're going to get better the next time. And so for me, it's funny because I talk to people about kindness and they're like, oh yeah, flowers and sunshine and roses and rainbows. And, you know, and I'm like, whoa, 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 like, hold on, like, time out. For me, kindness is such a strength. It's not just about doing things to help people in need. That is one facet of it. It's also to make people happy. I actually use the 1828 Noah Webster's Dictionary. To make people happy by granting their desires. Desire and need are two different things. If you can make somebody happy, you're not thinking about, boy, I know they could really use this coffee right now because times are tough. Or I bet they could really use this Postmates order or Uber Eats order because times are tough. You might be thinking, you know what? I just want to like surprise somebody. When you're sending flowers, if you're only sending flowers during times of grief, then you don't know the power of flowers. They can be used to really make somebody happy and just surprise and brighten up their day. That's another facet of kindness. The other facet of kindness deals with empathy towards yourself and knowing that you are equally worthy of the same compassion, mercy, thoughtfulness as any one of the people on the planet that you would like to give to. Because if you don't have kindness demonstrated to yourself by yourself, then you won't realize how powerful it is. We have to give ourselves time to breathe. We have to give ourselves mercy and forgiveness. We have to give ourselves space to dream outside of the doing and being busy. Otherwise, we will not be able to even harness or hold on to the power that kindness is. So I just like the idea of radically changing people's ideas and perspectives about kindness, because I think that we've just left it on this very elementary level for way too long.
I think that for me, what comes up is this idea of like, well, if I'm kind, then won't people walk all over me?
Yeah, I get that too. I get that too. I recently was talking to somebody and I said, you know, because kindness is a superpower, I've learned that it's not just about doing what other people want and being a doormat. I think that there's a lot of people who are too nice and they confuse that and think it's kind, but it's really not. It's too nice. I'll give you one great example that we can relate to coaching and mentoring. Sometimes your coach or mentor will tell you something very honestly, and it doesn't sound very nice. In fact, it sounds almost like a slap in the face, but it's because they care so much about you that they will not let you stay the way you are. That to me is the perfect proof that kindness is not about somebody walking all over you. You cannot be taken advantage of, because when you're 100% yourself, you know that you cannot be stopped. Like, I don't make life a contest in my career. I don't sit there and think, oh my God, there's all these people coming into the business and, you know, that there's not going to be room for me. I think, no, I can't be duplicated because I am unduplicatable. So there will always be room at this space and time in history for this perfect gift. There will never be another Jonathan who does what Jonathan does in the way that he does when he's authentic. So that eliminates competition. You can't be walked over when you know that you're not, I don't want to use the word married to your truth, but you're united to the truth of what you're doing. You know, when somebody sees someone who's so passionate and so convinced of what they're saying and doing, you kind of stop and think, wow, they're like really into this. It gives people a chance to take it in. And a lot of people are not fully convinced of who they are, so people don't believe what they have to say. That's when you get walked all over, when you really don't know who you are, when you really aren't confident in what you're saying and doing. But usually our mentors and our coaches are super confident and they will be like, listen, you got spinach in your teeth. I'm letting you know, because you haven't looked in a mirror lately. You need to stop doing this. This bad habit is costing you thousands or millions of dollars or whatever level you're at. So I say, okay, I'm going to use that in all areas of my life. I will never be overrun. I will never be walked all over when I am convinced of who I am and that what I'm doing is 100% right for me.
And what I'm getting just from what you just shared is the complexity and richness behind what kindness really represents. And kind of like what you said at the beginning of this is how we've kind of like dumbed it down to just like flowers and unicorns and rainbows, where it's this really rich and complex thing. And I love your example, because that literally happened to me a few weeks ago where I was talking to a coach and it was just one of those moments where you don't know that you don't know something. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it comes into your periphery and then you see that you don't know this thing. And then there's this like huge gap between where you are and where you thought you were, but you're not actually there. And it was just like, wow, you just like truth slapped me there. And I would say that was a kind act for sure. This person did not have to give me that feedback, and they did. And I'm incredibly grateful for it. And what comes up for me around that is this distinction, which I would love to talk about, that you highlight in your book, is the difference between kindness and niceness. Mm-hmm. Because nice would have been him keeping his mouth shut and saying, you know, yeah, that was okay. And, but I'm not interested. And instead he was kind and he told me like it was.
Yeah.
And I'm really grateful for it. So let's tease that a little bit apart. Kindness, niceness. What's the difference between those two distinctions there?
Well, I tell people all the time, if you really want to be mentored and coached, you really need to get over being nice and graduate to kindness. Because I don't like to say that nice is bad. I know a lot of people just do not like that word and dislike the concept completely. When somebody recently said to me, oh, nice is the gateway drug to kind. I said, I like that. I mean, it was just a nice positive spin of this is a starting point, but it's not where we're supposed to end up. So nice, I call it, is politeness. If you look up the word nice, I mean, you can go way back to like the 14th century and it was a totally different word that was not positive. But now it's exactness and precision. So I imagined myself, you know, in the beginning of my career, actually, I was never really this nice, but like wanting to cross all my T's and dot all my I's and make sure nobody didn't like me, you know, just I made no enemies and I just smiled. Now, that was not really my story, but I'm just thinking of myself if I was to imagine a nice 22-year-old who just entered the job force. Let's just say that. And polite. Hello in the hallway. Kindness. As you graduate to kindness, you are so much more aware of people around you. It's a warm embrace. Even if it's not the hug, it's an embrace of who that person is. It's a seeing eye to eye. If you look up the word interview in the old dictionaries, it's a mutual exchange. It's a mutual sight or view of somebody. So they see you, you see them. Because you see them, it gives them the opportunity to open up. And people are like, well, I don't have time for that. You know, like I have time for a hello in the hallway when we get back to our offices and public spaces, but I don't have time for what you're describing as kindness. And I say, whoa, 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 let's rewind. How much more breath does it take to say, hey, how are you? Versus, is there anything I can do for you? Two different questions, same amount of breath, different responses. One's nice, one's kind. When you say, is there anything I can do for you? Immediately their response is more open. Immediately they feel more seen and heard and appreciated and noticed. And I mean, I've done it. So I'm just giving you experiential data, not anything, you know, I don't have a spreadsheet for you. But my point is that kindness is situationally aware and takes every interaction as a potential for purpose and a greater reason for being there. When I do a live shot for ABC News, or if I do a documentary, or if I am on a call, or if I get invited to a lunch, if I get invited for drinks, I am going to go there and say, why am I really here? I know why I was invited. I know who invited me, but why am I really here? And I'm conscious. Is there anybody else in the room I'm supposed to talk to besides the person who invited me? I'm conscious in the halls of somebody who looks downcast, despondent. Maybe I need to give them a pep talk. Maybe I need to call them into a conference room and say, hey, is there anything you want to talk about? Maybe that takes 15 minutes longer than a hello in the hallway, but it's worth it because I might be preventing somebody from having a breakdown. I might be allowing somebody to express themselves when they don't feel like they have a safe place to do so at work. I use work examples quite frequently because that's where we spend the majority of our time, even when we're at home, digital nomads, entrepreneurs, like we're working, working, working. But we can see people on a Zoom call and we can see who's interested and who's not. We can see who's having a good day and who's not. Sometimes we can hone that ability. But my point in saying all this is to say, nice is great, but it's not good enough. Kind is where we want to be, because that's when we have that intuition, that discernment. Because if we're not being discerning with the person in the cubicle next to us or on the Zoom call with us, then we are not going to be as aware of opportunities for growing our business, for connecting with people who could take us to the next level, for investment opportunities, for land acquisitions that we just happened upon when other people didn't know about them because they weren't advertised. I think it hones in us an ability to be very, very nimble. And I know it actually creates in us the ability to be positioned like GPS for opportunities that other people might miss.
You're listening to the Mindful Communication Podcast, and today I'm sitting down with Adrian Bankert. This idea of kindness as a way of being is a really powerful concept, and you can tell by how much time we really spent talking about it. It's not necessarily a doing, it's a way of being, it's a way of acting in the world, and when you come from that point as a way of being, it really is infused, as we had mentioned, in every area of our lives. And what's cool about it is that kindness looks different for everyone. Adrienne mentioned several times how she would buy coffee for people. And when I think about kindness, although that might seem like a kind act for me, my kindness may be more around acts of service rather than using my money to buy things for people. And what's great about that is that that's exactly what's expected when we're talking about kindness. We're talking about each individual having their own unique fingerprint for kindness. In the second half of this interview, we distinguish kindness from niceness, and we talk about some really practical tips on how we can actually implement acts of kindness into our lives to cultivate that way of being in the long term. Behind that, I hear this level of not even just presence, but like this like intentionality that you bring to every interaction, right? And you summed it up really nicely at this quote. I'm just looking it up here. It's nice as being polite to people, kind as connection with people. And it really struck me because I love your example of just kind of passing by somebody and awesome question here, by the way, that you ask is instead of how are you, like, you know, what can I do for you? Like pattern interrupt, really bringing that intentionality of like, how do I really want even this tiny little interaction to go? Because if you asked me that passing in the hallway, I would for sure remember that very specific interaction versus every other one I have in the day.
Exactly. And I think being memorable is one of the greatest things that we can be. You know, I read, I think it was Chanel, but it could have been somebody else, but it was like something about having, it was more fashionable or more beautiful to be remembered than to make an entrance. You know, I mean, making an entrance is one thing, but what will they think of you when you leave? You know, what will they remember about you? And I think that it helps people bring us back to mind. You know, I say your kindness will allow you to be remembered. That will be remembered for opportunities for other jobs down the road, or maybe they can introduce you to a lovely person that you could pursue romance with. There's just all these different things. When you are kind, it literally refreshes people and it sometimes shocks them because they're so surprised because they have seen unkind people. They've seen people who just are nice and they see all that all day long. Nice, 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 nice. Boom. They're interrupted by a real genuine act of kindness. And they say, I got to keep in touch with that person. Or remember that person was really cool. That's what we all want to be, is remembered. That's a part of legacy.
And I don't remember the exact quote, but I think you kind of hinted to it. It's not what we do or say that people remember, but it's how we make them feel. So I think that's kind of what you're touching on right there, right? With the kindness of really having that interaction,
that's
really,
yeah,
make a difference,
Maya,
with them.
I believe Maya, yeah, Angelou said that. And I think
that's exactly it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I, yeah, think that for me, when I started writing the book, I had been meditating on this particular quote by Diane von Furstenberg, who said, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew the kind of woman I wanted to be. And I just thought, you know, I can pursue success in the climb and greatness and titles and money and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, will I be who I wanted to be? And how can I tap into the who? Because the success is going to come. The success is almost when you decide in your heart that it's non-negotiable, that you're going to be successful. Great. But what's more important than all that? What's real success? Real success to me, and I think that a lot of businesses are thinking about this, and that's why coaches are still in demand, is that they want holistic success. They want 360 degrees of fulfillment, not just financial fulfillment, not just family life balance, or work life balance. They want peace. They want joy. They want to enjoy what they're doing again. They want purpose. And we can all unify under that. That's something that brings us all together.
Absolutely. Very well said. And we're not going to go like too into it, because in the book you have lots of amazing examples of, and we've touched on them, of just how kindness has, as you mentioned, opened doors for opportunities, whether it's investments, amazing stories about meeting interesting people, making friends, all that kind of stuff. We're gonna have our listeners read the book for those amazing examples of how beneficial kindness is. One thing that came up for me as I read this book, and especially in the climate that we're in, I'm looking at you in particular being in the US, we're in a very unique time right now, talking a lot about systemic racism. And I see a lot of people who are angry right now, are angry with this system, a white supremacist system that oppresses them on a daily basis. And there's a lot of people who express themselves with that anger, with the yelling. And it's completely understandable. I kind of see and hear that yelling, and I know that that's someone who is not being heard and understood. And especially after not being heard and understood for so long, how does one bring themselves back to kindness?
Are you asking for the person who feels unseen, unheard, misunderstood to come back to kindness?
That's right.
So it's interesting. I use it for any time. I say that global crisis and personal crisis can be handled the same way. You start thinking of someone who your heart's breaking for. In the times when I felt completely out of control, oppressed, depressed, frustrated, lost, isolated, you know, angry, fearful, anything. What got me out of that was, okay, I want to solve the problem. I want to come as a problem solver. I want to bring the innovation. I want to care as much about the innovation of solving this big human problem as I would with, say, my excitement over technology and innovations in broadcasting, because I believe that technology and culture are parallels. They're analogies for one another. And so just as we have rapid, immediate connection now online, I believe we can have rapid and immediate connection with people who are diverse and who don't necessarily agree with one another. One of the women that I did a empathy workshop for, she said, I think I'm going to do a practice of being kind to someone I disagree with. And I thought, that is revolutionary. And that's one approach. You know, being kind to someone is not about, again, laying down on the floor and saying, walk all over me, you're right, I'm wrong. That is not what being kind is about. Being kind is about resolving in your mind and in your heart who you are. I have had to make many decisions in my life. Who am I going to be? If the world stops, who am I going to be? Am I going to let the world or someone else and their actions dictate who I am and change me from a kind person to an unkind person? No, I can't allow that to happen. There have been too many times in my life where I've had to stand and I've had to anchor myself and decide who I was in spite of actions. And then to become the innovator and to become the problem solver, kindness kept my head in the game. And so what I did as a way to keep myself focused on solutions instead of my feelings, because your feelings, you know, we're not here to judge what feelings are right or wrong or justifiable or not, but we express ourselves differently when we have that head in the game mentality, when we have that answer, when we have that, okay, I'm going to brainstorm this. I'm going to be part of architecting. I'm going to be part of building the next great vision. And so I always tell people, in order to start that, you have to ask yourself two questions. One, who is my heart breaking for right now? Who do I want to help? Once you ask that question, you're going to be a lot more honest about how you give and how you are kind instead of a grudging obligation. You know, a lot of people can write a check, throw money. You know, we've seen people step up and give to causes. But if it's not in your heart, I say don't do it. Don't do it out of obligation. Do it because you have a true compassion. Talk to your team and say, who is your heart breaking for? Where is your compassion directed to right now? And that could be a possibility for your team to have an authentic expression of kindness to a particular group, organization, cause. The second question would be, what problem do I want to solve? And when you sit down and you actually like breathe and stay grateful and get to that zone of solution building, that is how we weather any storm. I don't care what kind of storm it is.
Mm-hmm. I guess some of the takeaways that I'm getting from that is one major thing is there's got to be a desire to want to be kind. I mean, there's got to be some sort of level of awareness of like, this is how I want to show up. And then the second part is really bringing a clear head to the conversation. And I think that's maybe why some of the anger has erupted in the way it has erupted around any, not even what's going on now, but like at any moment where we forget about that kindness is that we're not clear-headed. We're not really being present. We are allowing our emotions to kind of dictate how it is that we're reacting. But when we are able to like calm down and really think critically about what's important to me and what, and I love to use the word solution rather than, you know, focusing on the problem, what do I want to solve? And then we can actually move forward together and find that solution, find that way to solve it in a way that it works for everybody through kindness as well.
Yeah, I really think that we all, I talked about grief in the book. I have a whole chapter on resilience and when the world is crazy. And a big portion of that is grieving, because when you're facing grief, which a lot of people are right now, that is how they're manifesting their frustration. They're really grieving inside. It is looking angry, or it is angry, but the root cause of it is grief and sorrow. I have a quote on one of my walls that says, anger is fear's bodyguard. You know, there's some fear, there's some grief, there's some sorrow. And so I remember what I had to do was to stay consistent in my kindness and my giving so that I didn't break down. You know, we do not serve anyone if we break down. We don't serve ourselves. We don't serve our community. It is time to think of what other people are going through. And I'm speaking to whoever is listening, of every, you know, background, because there's anger manifests itself differently. Fear manifests itself differently. Frustration does. But who is your heart breaking for? Follow that and you'll end up mapping your own orbit. You'll end up putting the path down that's already there so that you can live authentically, even in the midst of great, great turmoil, great times that we're in.
Love it. Let's start talking about, okay, so we talked a lot about all this great kindness stuff. I want to get into some practices. We already highlighted some. The Just Because calls, we're talking about the giving goal. And you actually highlight a lot of great ones in the book, and we're not going to give them all away because, again, our listeners are definitely going to pick up this book and read it. But one in particular that I did really enjoy reading about was this idea of, you mentioned that a way to bring on more kindness if you're in a bad mood is actually calling a friend and giving them some encouragement.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, because there were a lot of times when I would just call somebody to vent, and then you're rehearsing the anger, the frustration. I mean, this could be because I was mad about like life not playing out the way that it looked. I mean, think about it. 2020 has basically been the biggest monster of a disappointment or disillusionment for a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
But we've had tastes of this before. Not to this degree by any means, but like not knowing where your career is going, not knowing how you're going to reach people, not knowing how you're going to express your dream the way you want to. That feeling of just complete and total just frustration or disappointment can be overwhelming. And so I thought that before it was good to talk it out, you know, talk out your emotions about this, like a therapy session with your friend. But you end up sometimes feeling worse getting off the phone because you've just been regurgitating what you threw up. You know, it's like, ew. So what I did instead was quieted myself, kind of put my pain on the shelf, not to throw it out. You know, I admit that there's there. It's on the shelf. It's on the bookshelf, labeled Pain, Volume 1, and listened to someone else and gave them a pep talk and gave them encouragement. And by doing that, I actually returned to my purpose. Like, oh, I am a mentor. I am a coach. I am an encourager. I am, because what we do when we lose it is we forget who we are. When we break down, when we can't communicate, when we give our spouse or our friends the silent treatment because we're just taxed to the nth degree, it's because we have forgotten how much we're loved and we've forgotten who we are. And so returning to identity by doing what is a true expression of who we are, coaching, encouraging, giving people pep talks, being a joy, partnering with other success, which all of your listeners, I'm sure that's why they're listening, endeavor to do, it actually benefits you and the other person. That's why kindness is so cool, because it's always a win-win scenario. But one thing that I started doing, because I was feeling the effects of isolation in my New York apartment during the pandemic and just missing people, just missing the genuine connection, you know, the people who know me looking in my eyes, seeing people on the street and them smiling, missing that like crazy. I thought, okay, I did what I just told you to do. I asked two questions. Where's my compassion going and who do I want to help? And I thought, well, I'm missing people's faces. I'm sure there's other people who miss seeing faces. So I'm going to start doing selfie videos instead of text messages. And so I would frame the camera in front of my face like a selfie, smile so it's not blurry, and then press record and just say something encouraging, a sign of appreciation to coworkers, to friends. Hey, it's Adrienne. I just want to tell you, I miss your face. I can't wait to see your face, but you're a rock star. I appreciate you. And I would press send. It would be like 10 to 15 seconds because people don't have a lot of time. But I was so tired of text messages. It was like, this is the most unkind thing right now. All I have is texts and emails and Zooms. I'm over it.
So many Zooms.
Yeah, so many Zooms. And I was just like, but I thought we're doing Zoom, which is showing your face for business. But this is a big part of kindness to me. If you're not doing the same level of commitment to personal relationships that you are to your career, then your life is on this like imbalanced weight. It's imbalanced on the seesaw. Because I'm willing to sit there and like stare into a camera and look interested when my boss hosts a meeting, but I won't send, you know, a video or do a FaceTime with a friend or family member. It's like, oh yeah, hey, how you doing? You healthy? You good? Okay, love you. Like it becomes very routine instead of connected. And so another thing that I started doing because I was inspired, one of the women who works for me, she actually started adopting a few of her friends who were furloughed or laid off because of the pandemic's economic effects. And I was so inspired. She called all these mutual friends. It was like, what are we going to do about it? And they invested in those friends and gave them like 2 or 3 months worth of groceries and food delivery services. And I thought, well, that's cool. I said, you know what I'm going to start doing? I'm going to start surprising people with lunches and coffee. I'm just going to deposit money into their Venmo accounts. And on one of my calls where I moderate a group of executives, I actually have done this where every month we choose another woman and we all buy them coffee, which means we all deposit the cost of a coffee or more into their accounts and they can do whatever they want with the cash. This is not a tax write-off. This is not charity. This is literally like, I would have taken you to coffee if I could see you in person, but I can't. So you can go get a mani-pedi. You can give it to charity. You can go, you know, take your kids to I don't know what you would do. Take them to Target. I don't know. Whatever people do for fun now. But that was another idea that came about because I was feeling this longing to connect from the comfort of my couch. Like, how can I still be my kind self when I can't see and do the things that I would normally do?
Yeah.
I don't want to over talk, so I'm just going to stop right there for now, unless you have another question.
I think that was a wonderful way to wrap things up. You know, it's clear just in terms of kind of what you were saying there, your embodiment of kindness, it just sprouted, you know, 10,000 different ideas about how you could be kind, because that's where you started from is like, well, I am a kind person. What would a kind person do? Wouldn't it be cool if I acted kind toward this person? What would that look like? And then just naturally the ideas flowed. So I think that it just goes to show that with that practice, which we talked about, and there's more, even more in the book, that you can really cultivate that kind of way of living your life and have it manifest around you and obviously build relationships, open opportunities, and just live into that highest version of yourself, that authentic self. So thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. It was really great having you here. It was very kind of you to visit, and wishing you best of luck with the book.
Thank you so much, Jonathan. It was great talking to you. You asked great questions.
Big thanks to Adrienne for coming onto the podcast. If you enjoyed today's show, please make sure to subscribe to the podcast and give it a great rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It would be greatly appreciated and really help spread word about the show. Also, be sure to head over to the website mindfulcommunication.me for 2 amazing resources. The first is a free 4-part video training series with lots of great email follow-ups to help you resolve any and all conflicts in your life. This powerful program is available for free on the website. Just go sign up with your name and email address and start that transformation. The second resource is called the Tough Talks Made Easy Conflict Assessment Tool. This gives you a 45-minute consultation with me where we take on a tough conversation that you've been avoiding, come up with a game plan, a roadmap, and find a very natural and powerful way for you to express yourself with confidence and with ease. you can use the promo code podcast50 for 50% off the tool. So what are you waiting for? Stop avoiding that difficult conversation, head into it powerfully, and find that peace that you are looking for. Today's music was provided by Shinogo. You can get Shinogo's music wherever you get your music. Once again, you've been listening to the Mindful Communication Podcast. I've been your host, Jonathan Miller. Thanks for tuning in.